to be learned from this, and I learned it very well. Now I know you're not the only starfish in the sea. If I never hear your name again, it's all the same to me. And I think it's gonna be alright. Yeah, the worst is over now. The morning sun is shining like a red rubber ball.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Music producer John Simon will take the stage at Shadowland Theater in Ellenville, New York, this Saturday at 8 p.m. He is hosting an evening of reminiscences of a life in rock and roll, a trip down memory lane, a lane that includes some heavyweights: Janis Joplin, Bob Dylan, Simon & Garfunkel, Leonard Cohen, The Band, Blood, Sweat & Tears, many others. He has been a producer, a composer, a solo performer, a session musician. He's even written the odd ballet. John Simon, welcome to the Roundtable. Nice to have you here.
Geez, that guy here, I feel like I'd like to leave the room and leave it to him.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. You produced that record we heard coming in.
I did, yeah. It was my first... the first group that I actually brought to the label. I had to really get my courage up to ask my boss for enough money to go in and produce this little record.
By The Circle.
Yeah, they weren't called The Circle at the time. They came in. Okay, I was in my little 10x10 windowless cubicle at Columbia Records as an associate junior producer. And this guy came in, and he'd been to every other producer who turned him down. And he had this demo of that song you just heard. And the band was called, it wasn't called The Circle at the time, I think they were called The Frat Boys or something like that. But the guy who brought the demo in my office caught my attention because he represented himself as, quote, Brian Epstein's American associate.
Ah.
And since Brian Epstein was the Beatles manager, that carried a little weight with me. And the exciting thing was that Brian Epstein was going to come to this country to name the band. And the guys got all excited because Brian Epstein had, in fact, named the Beatles, and they thought that their new name would, last in rock and roll history forever. And it didn't, because people say, oh, I remember that record, Red Rubber Ball. What was the name of that band, anyway?
Well, you know, you produced them. You were there at certainly a cusp of rock and roll where it changed in the 64 range when you were at Columbia, and you went into the 70s, and so much happened in rock and roll. But first, you know, I got to ask you, you have done so much and you continue to do so much. Why present an evening with John Simon now?
Okay, that has to do with the Shadowland Theater. Now, I'm on the board of the Shadowland Theater, and even before I was on the board, I was a big appreciator of the theater. The Shadowland Theater is in a very remote corner of Ulster County. It's not up where all the action is, where Woodstock and Kingston and Saugerties and Newpaltz are. So I guess I'm addressing this to the southwestern quadrant of your listening audience. It's so worth a trip to discover this theater. It's the only theater in Ulster County with an actor's equity contract, which means that they get professional actors from New York City to come up for their productions. It's a union shop in that sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, UPAC in Kingston may bring in shows with professional actors, but Shadowland produces its own shows from scratch, build their own sets, they find their props, costumes, lighting, etc. And beside that, educates young people who want to have careers in show business. They come in first as interns, and then some of them go on to be professional theater people. For instance, Brittany Green, who's a stage manager who shows up at the Shadowland to do performances, started off as an intern at Shadowland. And people are becoming more and more aware of the theater. We were just given a second performance space, a black box theater, and we now have a capital campaigns project going on. And with the money coming in from that campaign, we're sprucing up the original theater, our main theater, which was at first a vaudeville house from the 1920s in a great-looking space. So in order to help the theater out, we had a board meeting, and in a weak moment, I said, well, you know, they were talking about lectures and things they could do when the theater didn't have a show going on. I said, well, maybe I can give a talk. And everyone said, yeah, give a talk on rock and roll. And I realized shortly after that I may have gotten myself in for more than I could handle, because I'm not essentially a lecturer.
Right.
I don't, you know, have all the facts straight. But when I decided to dispense with research and say I'm not going to do any research, then my job became a lot easier.
And that works for me as well.
Does it?
Good? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there'll be a lot of pictures, and there'll be some sound and things like that at
the
show Saturday.
I'll be, you know, as I say, I'm not an expert, but I did spend a lot of years in rock and roll, and, you know, I'm a thinking person. I just had my thoughts about what I saw, and I came up with some crazy theories and things that I saw, and I'm going to lay them out for people, and they can say whether they think I'm right or not.
Well, we're talking to John Simon, and the show is at Shadowland Theater in Ellenville, New York. It will be a trip down memory lane, if you will. Now, you started at Columbia, and, you know, in the early 60s, Columbia didn't do rock and roll. How did all that change?
Well, it all changed, I guess, because of the Beatles, because Capitol Records was the distributor of the Beatles in this country, and all the other record companies were envious, and they all wanted their own four lads from Liverpool. So they started signing groups at that point, you know, and a lot of these groups didn't have too much talent, but a lot of them went on to a lot of the individuals who were in those groups did have some talent and went on to have careers in music. But I like to just cite, this is one of my crazy theories, and I think I'm right, that one of the most important dates in rock and roll history was Christmas morning of 1965.
Why?
Why? Because earlier that year, the CBS Corporation bought the Fender Guitar Company. Now, the Fender Guitar Company was a small business started by Leo Fender. He made electric guitars that he sold to professional musicians. But after CBS bought the company, the production of guitars went through the ceiling and advertising went through the ceiling. And so on Christmas morning of 1965, beside that Schwinn bicycle and that Rawlings baseball mitt under the Christmas tree, there was a brand new Fender guitar. And with that Fender guitar, a lot of new bands were formed and kids would let their hair grow long, get crazy costumes like the Beatles, and they'd start playing the high school dances, and girls start going crazy for them at the high school dances. And these record companies who wanted to have their own four lads from Liverpool would hire these four lads from wherever and would sign them to big contracts and drop them in the laps of people like me to make something approximating music.
And that must have been tricky in some cases to polish that.
Yeah.
Especially without multi-track.
Yeah, that's when multi-track came into being, I think, as a way to, it's hard to explain that to somebody who doesn't understand what tracks are. It's like, how can I explain it without something visual? Let me think.
Thinking is good practice for Saturday night, so, you know, we'll help you write it.
Thinking doesn't work on the radio. They call it dead air.
We do that.
Yeah. Well, when it's hard to explain.
Okay.
Let's move on to something else.
All right. You know, basically, in the old days, you would record live. You record a band live.
That's right.
And then when the Beatles came along, or whenever, in the 60s, you would know better than me, suddenly you had more tracks to work. You had eight tracks.
Yeah.
You could layer stuff on.
Yeah, we're skipping a step. Yeah, laying stuff on, that's how we can understand this. Before the Beatles, there was just say three tracks that went into the two-track stereo. People listen to music at home, they listen on stereo. That's essentially two tracks. In the recording studio, they recorded on little fatter tape that had three tracks on it. One track went to the left, one track went to the right, and the vocal track went up the middle. That was all you needed because the instrumentalists, the musicians who played, and the singers were pros. We did four songs in 3 hours when I first showed up at Columbia Records. That was the norm. Everybody could do that. Because if you couldn't do that, you'd get replaced by somebody who could.
Yeah.
Well, when these new bands showed up, they could not do four songs in 3 hours. It was hard for them to do one song in a day. And we would find ourselves repeating over and over and over again, doing take after take after take on these three-track recording tapes. Then someone came up with a great idea. Let's make more tracks on this tape. Let's make like eight tracks, put the band on the original three tracks, and then if, for instance, the guitar player couldn't play his solo well, we'd put him on track four, and then again on track five, and then again on track six, and then we'd sample from each track until we got a reasonable solo and put that together. So all of a sudden, you had more tracks in the recording studio. Instead of just three tracks, you had eight tracks. But then that led to something else. One of the things I'm realizing as I'm putting this lecture together is how one thing leads to another. And this, the fact that these bands couldn't play led to 8-track music and then 8-track tape. And then that led to an entirely new musical art form that I could call a more produced record. Up until that time, when a band came into a recording studio, they were recording exactly what they did live. But once we had this 8-track tape, a band with some talent, some musicianship, some gifts of creativity could create an entirely new recording that was layered. Beside what they could do live, they could layer on additional instruments, additional voices, etc. And you can see this most clearly with a group like the Beatles, whose first couple of albums were just documentaries of what they did on stage. But after the 8-track tape came in, and then subsequently 16-track and 24-track, you get albums like Sgt. Pepper and whatever followed after that.
Well, let's jump ahead now. Your career took off. And give us, in the last couple of minutes here, some of your standout memories from working with some of these giants.
Whoa, some of my standout memories.
Well, you know, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Simon and Garfunkel, Bob Dylan.
Well, you know, each one has a story. Blood, Sweat, and Tears is unique in the fact that Al Kooper started the band, and then the band fired him after the first album.
Oops.
Which is, but I mean, that was all mutual, I'm sure. Al left, you know, on good terms. I remember... I used to live right next door to Robbie Robertson in Woodstock. We shared the same driveway, and one afternoon I was taking a nap on my couch, and there was a knock on the door, and I answered the door, and it was Bob Dylan. And so I'd met Bob a couple of times, but I didn't really know him to have a conversation with him for any length. He came in and he said, John, I'd like you to be my musical director for you. I'm doing this movie, Rinaldo and Clara, and I need a musical secretary. And I turned him down because I didn't want to be anybody's musical secretary because even though I had great respect for Bob Dylan, it's difficult being someone's musical secretary who isn't a musician. For instance, when I did this, I first started working with Simon and Garfunkel. We got together before the session and decided on the arrangement, and I wrote all the parts out that they dictated to me, you know, and then we got to the recording session, and we ran the song down, and I was in the studio with the musicians conducting them, and Paul and Artie were in the control room, and after we did the first take, the violin players were fooling around a little bit, and I heard a voice coming out of the control room saying, "What was that?" And I said, "What was that?" And they said, "What was that music?" And I said, "Oh, that was the strings just tuning up a little bit." And they said, "Well, forget the arrangement. We want that instead."
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I wish we had an hour because we are only beginning to scratch the surface. I wanted to talk about your session work with Howling Wolf and some of these other guys, but we'll wait until Saturday night. Shadowland Theater in Ellenville, New York. John Simon has so many stories to tell. He will be at Shadowland in Ellenville Saturday at 8 p.m. Great pleasure to have you here, sir.
Great pleasure to be here, Ray. Thanks a lot.
You betcha. Visit shadowlandtheater.org for more information or call 845-647-5511 to reserve your tickets. Shadowlandtheater.org. John, we will see you there, and you are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.